She hers me some wheels for my old pickup.
Okay, that has nothing to do with what we're doing today.
$200.
What pickup? You don't have a pickup. Oh, the one pickup. Okay.
Woman.
My bad.
I don't even know if it's got the right size wheel lug pattern.
What about Tori? Tori has a car now.
That's right. Tori did get a car. Congratulations, Tori.
And it is so cute.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Are you loving it?
I am.
You just get to get up and go whenever you want. You don't have to wait on nobody.
Yeah.
You don't have to Uber.
Oh, God. That shit's so expensive, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's ridiculously expensive.
It is.
Shit, now you could Uber on the side now.
I make some money.
Make a little extra cash.
Till you get a creeper in your car.
Mm.
Or until I get some drunk people in my car.
They throw up all over your back seat.
Nope.
Well, I think they have, like, rules for stuff like that.
Yeah, you just rate them bad. That's all you get, I think.
No, like, if you have somebody in your car that's, like, being weird, you can get them out.
Well, yeah. Not just gonna keep going.
Well, you said you could rate them bad.
Yeah, then they'll just get in somebody else's car and do the same thing again.
Well, I mean, obviously. Oh, my goodness.
Anyways, I had an encounter with a creeper at Walmart this weekend. Did I tell you about that?
Bro, you have encounters with creepers all the time.
I don't know what it is about me that it's just like a beacon that says weirdos. Come say hello. So I took the kids to Walmart yesterday to grab some groceries. And the girls are, of course, doing their own thing, looking around. Me and Jackson are walking. And I'm pushing the cart. He's walking next to me. And I hear this sound behind me. And he makes like a meow sound and like walks really fast in front of me. And I was just like, okay, whatever, you know, just being silly. So Jackson and I are walking along, and, like, he's not even looking at me. He's walking away from me with his back to me, but has, like, he's, like, walking, and he goes, I like your tattoo. Because I had shorts on. He could see my leg tattoo. I was like, oh, thanks. And, like, you know, I thought that was it. And so we continue to walk, and he turns around and looks at me and just stares at me and goes, I like tattoos. And I was just like, okay. And I hate being approached in public when I'm alone with my kids. Like, it just freaks me out. So I'm like grabbing for Jackson, like, grab my hand. And he goes, I have tattoos. And at this point, I'm like,
oh, that's how every scary movie starts.
I know. Like, are you fixing to cut my skin off and wear it? Like, what is going on? And I was just like, oh.
Like, this motherfucker's fixing to follow me home.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. And so I was just like, okay. And then he just speed walks away from me. And I was just like, what the hell just happened?
Wow.
I just, I don't know. It was weird. It was definitely weird.
Maybe he's a little bit on the spectrum.
I don't know. It was just really weird. Just don't approach me in public when I'm by myself with my... Don't approach me. No, I'm just kidding. Let's just start there. Don't approach me.
That's really weird social behavior to begin with. So, I mean, like, that's... It's questionable.
Yeah, and I mean, you could be right. He could have been on the spectrum and just, you know, just kind of an awkward guy. But like I said, when I'm by myself with the kids and I'm approached, I don't know. Like, my anxiety goes up immediately.
And, you know, you might have had a brush with a serial killer.
It might have been. He might be freaking, what's his name? Put the lotion on its skin guy. Buffalo yeah. Bill. I kept on thinking Buffalo Bob, and I knew that wasn't right. But anyways, let's go ahead and continue, because somebody's already falling asleep over there. Wow. Zoom into her face right now. This bitch did not show up until...
After 11.
Yeah, after 11. Ate our food and said, I'm not going to sit over here because I'm going to sleep.
Yep. We have the camera right on her.
Yep.
Still ended up sitting over here.
Yep. I'm going to zoom it on her face during the whole thing. So if that's all it is of Tori's face, sorry, guys. And she wanted me to curl her hair tonight.
Yeah, I'm finding back sleep. So I have to sleep during the podcast so I can get ready for Easter. I read all the story.
Okay, here's the story. New London school explosion. And we already started this once. We tried to record last night with Hadley and Seth, and it was not working.
Yep. At least I'm better than Hadley.
Yeah, at least you're quiet.
I go peacefully.
Yeah. Hadley was walking through here, tripping over wires, knocking cameras over, grabbing microphones.
She was having a great time.
She was having the best time of her life. She spilled my wine. I had the wine sitting over here on the floor so that she wouldn't knock it over. And she, little stinker, walked over here, and I heard, like, liquid hitting the floor, and I thought, is she peeing? I look over, my wine's being dumped over. I was like, ah, crap. So, it's a little bit calmer tonight. So, we are covering the New London school explosion. New London, Texas looks like a normal, quiet East Texas town, but on March 18th, 1937, a school in New London was coming to an end for a long weekend when suddenly a massive explosion occurs, leading to one of the deadliest and most impactful tragedies in American history. A disaster so powerful, it changed laws across the entire country.
Have you ever been there?
No.
It is actually a very attractive, cute little East Texas town.
Really?
Yeah.
I have never been. It's only 30 minutes from here, but I have never been there.
It's a really nice little town.
Yeah.
And I found out about it whenever I was working in the oil field, because I had to drive literally everywhere. And when I drove through that particular town a few times, I can't remember if it was a statue or like a little memorial thing. It's been a long time since I've been there. But there was something there that kind of told this story on like a little plaque.
I'll talk about it later on. So.
But yeah, it was definitely interesting going and seeing that. So it may be worth our time for me to take you to like go look at that.
Lunch date.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. Well, New London was originally known as London and established in 1855. But because Kimball County had already established a U.S. post office station named London, the town changed its name to New London in 1931. Real original there. While everyone was dealing with the Great Depression, New London was growing overnight due to the sudden oil field boom in 1931. East Texas became a hotspot. Just a few miles from New London, the first oil well was drilled, and it became the second largest oil well in the United States by a man named Columbus Marion Joyner, which you asked us last night when we got to this point, what was the name of it, and we looked it up. What was it?
I can't remember the name of the
started well. Started with an H, like Hatfield or...
Something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But it was huge.
So we weren't sure whether they were talking about the actual well itself or the formation itself.
I gotcha.
Which is totally different, but kind of the same.
Well, this Joyner guy, I'm fixing to talk about him a little bit, but he was also, his nickname was Dad. So Joyner was known to
be... Hi, Poppy.
Okay. Joyner was known to be a scammer. It was suspected that there was oil in the area, so Joyner bought a bunch of land to start oil prospecting, which I believe I seen where, like, somebody told him, hey, go check this area out, and kind of led him there. He didn't just pick it randomly and said, I'm going to do it. But I can't remember who it was, but somebody kind of guided him and said, hey, go check this area out.
I swear I just seen, like, a preview of a movie or something like this.
Really?
With almost the same exact story.
With the school and everything, or just the Joyner part? Not the school,
but this part.
Well, I mean, I'm fixing to tell you a little bit about him, but, like, he was a scammer, and then he did what I'm fixing to tell you what he did, but then, and this is just in, I think, 1931 is what I told you, and then the school explosion, I believe, happened in 1937. Mm-hmm. So after hitting this oil that I just told you about, by 1937, he already lost all of his money, spent every single dime of it, and was completely broke after finding the second largest oil well in the United States.
He probably got screwed over whenever whoever bought it from him.
I don't know.
Probably bought it for pennies on the dollar.
I don't know. I just did a quick research on it. I didn't do like a deep dive, but it'd be interesting.
It'd be interesting to look into that a little deeper.
Maybe there'll be a movie.
Maybe there is a movie. I know. We just don't know it.
Maybe. So Joyner bought a bunch of land to start oil prospecting, selling certificates of interest for $25 a piece so that they could get a percentage of any oil found. In order to make the sales, he mailed out a geological report that may have been a bit embellished to help drive interest. He also claimed that there were already confirmed oil-producing sands and that large companies were already in the area finding it.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a lie. He didn't know there was any oil there, and there were absolutely no big companies there searching. He's basically just throwing spaghetti at the wall to try to see if he could get some money, basically.
See if something stuck.
Yeah, exactly. To prove his claims, he had to run a drill test. The first one allegedly failed when a pipe supposedly got stuck in the ground. So he ended up selling more mail shares, and he drilled a second time, this time making a little bit further, but then the pipe got stuck again. And from what I read, he basically used the oldest, most broke-down equipment that you could buy. Like, he was not spending any extra money. He was doing bare minimum to make it look like he was drilling. But really, all he was trying to do is get people to send him money. And he'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm drilling. And doing the, like, bare minimum to make it look like he was legit.
Mm-hmm.
So he did it a third time. But this time, third time is the charm. He did it again using old, dated equipment. And as he was drilling, a boiler would explode, injuring two people. But they continued to drill after that, and this time they struck oil on September 5th, 1930. Finally, Joyner's luck was turning around because this one was one of the biggest fields in the United States. This would change everything for New London. This brought in people from all over with money and equipment searching for the next big find. With the sudden growth, new houses and business were being built, new roads were being paved, and a once quiet farming community was now flourishing. They decided to build a new school. They began building the new state-of-the-art school in 1932. And when you would have like an aerial view of the school, it was built in like a capitalized E. So it had like the back of the E and then the three prongs on it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they made it out of concrete and steel. They added a new football field, and it was the very first football field in East Texas to have electric lights. So kind of a big deal. The main building consisted of classrooms from 5th to 11th grade. And we talked about this last night. They actually didn't have a 12th grade back then. Like, it wasn't standardized for there to be a 12th grade. So you would graduate after the 11th grade.
Mm-hmm.
Funded by the local oil boom, the school was constructed for about $1 million, which is equivalent to about $23.6 million today.
It's quite a bit of money.
That's a big chunk of change.
Hell, I'd be all right with just 1 million.
Yeah, just give me a little mil.
Give me 100,000.
Well, this school includes...
Spend it real quick.
Yeah, it doesn't go very far. The school included classrooms, a science lab, large auditorium, library, shop classes. I mean, basically anything and everything the school could ever want or need, it had it. It was built on a 3 to 6 foot slope. The front of the building was the long part, like the back part of the capital E. And then the three prongs, I guess, were kind of like on the backside of it. But with that slope, the long side was one story, but the three prongs in the back were actually two stories. But when you walked in, you couldn't even tell it was two stories because of the way it was built. There was also a basement that was constructed that was the entire length of the building underneath the classroom area. The basement was about 253 feet long, 56 feet wide, and just over 4.5 feet tall. Originally, they wanted to put a boiler system in this open, vacant space to heat the school, but a radiator salesman came by and was like, hey, I've got these radiators. I'll cut you a big, you know, a good deal. See,
I meant to look into what you're talking about and figure out what you mean by radiator.
I don't know. All of it just said a radiator system.
Yeah. I meant to look into that. Because a boiler system kind of runs off of like a type of radiator to heat certain rooms too.
Yeah.
But just it kind of depends on the system.
Yeah. I don't know.
So I'm not really sure.
And I'm not knowledgeable enough. I'm just repeating what I found. So they decided they would rather have the gas heaters rather than the steam heaters, the boiler system. Oh, and a big reason they wanted to do that is because this school was basically built because of the oil field, the natural gases and everything, and they kind of wanted to pay homage to that. And so I think that was another reason why they decided to use this system rather than the boiler system.
So this must have been like a natural gas heated boiler. Or not boiler, but radiator.
Yes.
So it was probably oil-filled radiator that was heated with natural gas then.
Yes.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Okay. Glad we got it figured out.
Yeah. Sorry, I was over here working it out in my head.
Well, they ended up installing 72 gas heaters throughout the entire school. Each gas heater had to be individually turned on each day that they needed them. So at the beginning of each day, a janitor or teachers or whoever would come in and say, okay, these rooms need to be heated or this part of the school needs to be heated. And they would have to manually go turn each one of them on. Well, I'd say turn them on, light them, I guess. This was a pretty common practice at the time, nothing out of the ordinary. Now, with this new system, they would have to run the gas pipes through the basement area. But the issue was there was no real ventilation system since the area was originally built for this boiler system. They don't need as much ventilation as something with like natural gas. I think there was like 4 small ventilated areas and they were like, good enough. We'll use those. Now, the next obstacle was that the price of providing natural gas for the heaters was going to cost about $250 to $300 a month, which today's money is about $4,500 to $6,000 per month to heat the school. They had been getting their gas from a meter before building the new school previously, but when the new construction began, they ended up cutting it off at that meter, and it was then decided by the school board to actually have janitors and like the school plumber to run a 2-inch gas line underneath the school. And then this would run about several hundred yards to I put Paradise, and then I watched another YouTube video and they didn't call it Paradise. So I may have put that wrong, but it was a gas company basically. And it was a residue gas line.
Paradigm?
Parent, maybe. I don't remember. Started with a P. Potato, potato.
Yeah. Probably some autocorrect.
Probably. This would provide the school with free gas to heat the school. In the process of drilling oil, it brings natural gas up to the surface with it. Most of these gases are then piped out and then burnt off away from the drilling rig.
Mm-hmm.
It was a common practice at the time for any individual, whether they're qualified or not, to just tap into that flare line and use the natural gas that they were burning off.
Mm-hmm. And that was something that we all talked about last night, too, is like back then, that byproduct was just seen as a waste material.
And that's kind of, I may talk about it a little bit more, but to them, it would cost more money to, I don't know what the correct terminology is, harvest it mm-hmm. and get it to where they need it than it would be just to burn it off. Mm-hmm. It wasn't worth their time.
Yeah. But it eventually became a staple in the American home. And of course, with that being a product that people need, it became a product that people could sell.
Yeah. So the companies, they really didn't care who would use it. And there were many individuals that have done the same thing, and they were heating their homes with the excess gas. One issue that was not really considered was the type of gas that was coming through the line. Again, there was no regulation. So correct me if I'm wrong. So one guy went on like a deep dive on this, and I tried to make sense of it. Correct me if I'm wrong. At one point, I was like, okay, he's going way far deep into this. I just want like the basic. So I try to make sense of it. So tell me if I'm wrong. There's a wet gas and a dry gas.
Mm-hmm.
Dry gas, think of it like plain methane gas. It's clean, simple, ready to use for cooking, heating, or electricity. There's nothing extra hiding in it. And then you have wet gas, and it isn't just gas. It comes up with extras mixed in it like propane, butane, and other gases.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's good. Very true.
Okay. I feel great then.
they go through processes to separate all of those different gases, and that's why it's all pumped to a certain station. And you'll see them on the side of the highway where they have, like, you've seen the separators for, like, the water and oil separators with the great big huge tanks. But then you've also seen where you drive by and it just looks almost like a weird big-ass chemistry set with a bunch of different sized, most of the time they're green, but they're just like big chambers.
Mm-hmm.
They're not necessarily big giant vessels like they are with oil, but they're smaller chambers. And those are all separators, and they separate different parts and particles in the gas.
Okay. So it was kind of, you went more detailed. I just said the liquids would then need to be separated before the gas could be used or should mm-hmm. be used. The gas that the school was getting from the line was wet gas.
Mm-hmm. It was very common back then.
Yeah. They, of course, didn't change anything in the systems to accommodate this. The pressure and the composition of the gas would fluctuate constantly, and then the system really didn't have the ability to regulate or make any changes to burn the gas safely. It would just be like wide open, or and it could cause a lot of issues.
One thing about burning gases like that, and they don't necessarily have the same gas going through it,
mm-hmm.
and the pressure fluctuations and things like that, it'll actually cause the gas to burn incorrectly and create a carbon monoxide situation.
And these people were just tapping in it. Like,
yeah.
It's cool, man. It's cool.
Well, they didn't know anything
about it. I know. It's just, it blows your mind. You don't know it's an issue until it's an issue. And you're like, people have been doing it for years, and it is what it is. But
Well, and that's, you know, like we're fixing to get into, a lot of those regulations change over the years because of
these accidents. Types of things. Yeah. Well, all these gases also have, I don't know if I'm, again, using the right terminology, different explosion limits, or I guess different explosion
ratings.
That's probably a better word. Natural gas also had At this time, no smell and no additives were being added to be able to detect any of these leaks. So it's clear, there's no smell. It's virtually impossible to know that there's a leak until it's too late.
Yeah.
So now that we have that covered and what led up to this day, we're going to go back to March 18th, 1937. It was a Thursday. And oh yeah, before I get started on this, every YouTube video and video and podcast, a lot of them had basically the same or very similar stories and like witnesses accounts, but they all use different names for these kids. So I may not have the legit names for these kids, but the stories are, like I said, all similar. But like I said, as I was researching it, you'd have one and it'd be the exact same story as this one, but they were different names. And that could have been because they're minors. It happened in 1937, so mm-hmm. I'm sure some of that gets lost. I'll have to look it up. I should have looked it before we started. There's actually a book about this, and I didn't have enough time to read it before we did this, but I'm going to put it on my to-be-read list because I think it'd be really a good book to read. Okay, so now that we got through that, it was a Thursday, and classes had been canceled for Friday to allow students to attend and participate in the interscholastic meet in Henderson. And from what I understand, it's kind of like what we do with the UIL events now. Like they have spelling bees and academic competitions and softball games and tennis matches, and all the schools would come together and compete, basically. And so that was going to take place in Henderson. And so that everybody could participate or go watch, they decided to cancel classes on Friday. So, yeah, there you go. Over 1,000 students attended the school that day. The superintendent, Mr. Shaw, welcomed all the students that morning as they were filing in. They did hold an assembly in the auditorium that day, and he basically concluded it just letting the students know how proud he was of all of them, and he was really looking forward to that next day watching them all compete, and just saying how excited and proud he was of these kids. Classes began, and Mr. Shaw would continue his day because he had to leave later to officiate a tennis match at 3 o'clock. So everyone, they're going on about their day. They're all anxious for school to be released. They are, you know, ready for that next day's events. There was an eighth grader by the name of Ardith Davidson. She was actually a little bit late for school that day because her and her mom were arguing about her wearing a jacket. So it's middle of March in Texas. It's either really hot or really cold. Well, it was really warm in the afternoon, but the mornings and evenings were still chilly. And her mom's like, well, take a jacket. And she's like, Mom, I've got softball pictures. I'm just going to have to change later. I don't want to. And so they got in a huge argument, and she would end up being late to school because of that.
We know how that goes.
We 100% know how that goes. She was ready just to get back to school to meet up with her best friends, Pearl and Dorothy. Pearl and Dorothy would be in the library at 3 o'clock, where it said that they worked there in the afternoons. I'm guessing kind of like a teacher's aide for the library. So they would be in the library at about 3 o'clock. Ardith would actually have science class at that time. Fifth grader Bill Thompson was crushing on a girl in class, and he was sitting like a few seats over from her, and he ended up writing a note to a little girl named Ethel asking to switch seats with her so that he could sit by the little girl that he was crushing on. And so he wrote that note and was like, hey, will you switch with me so I can sit by her? And she's like, yeah, okay, whatever. So they switched seats. Really sweet. For now. One source said that there was a dance performance actually being held that day for some of the moms in the PTA for the younger students. And so they were actually having that meeting or performance in the school gym. But the school gym wasn't connected to the actual main part of the school. So it was like detached. One of the moms had actually sent her child out to the car to wait for the performance to be over because he couldn't sit still. He was fidgety. And she's like, go sit in the car and wait. Like, let me enjoy this. Go sit and chill, bro. And sent him out the door. another little boy, a young man, William Gregg, and another boy were sent outside to clean erasers at the end of the day. And there was another young man, W.G. Watson, that was working on a project in the shop class. And they're all just watching this clock, waiting for it to strike 3:15, 3:30, whatever time it needed to be so that they could leave. Like, they were all just counting down the minutes. So he's working on this project, and he needed a power tool. And this power tool was known to kind of be on the fritz. And so the shop class teacher actually went to go grab it out of the storage closet. Now, this little storage closet or crawl space was actually kind of connected to the basement. And there was a plug-in right next to it. So he got this power tool out and plugged it in. And in a second, everyone's lives would change forever. Witnesses outside would say that at about 3:15, the entire school would lift up, suspending in air for a few seconds before it would come crashing down in a huge explosion of debris.
Man, could you imagine?
Could not.
That would be wild.
Mr. Shaw was walking towards the tennis court at this time, and he would actually end up being knocked out by a piece of wood falling. When he came to, he looked over and seen the school and was absolutely devastated. Not only were his students and faculty in that building, but his own two kids were in that school as well. So he had a younger, I think it was son and a daughter, that was actually a teacher in that school.
Wow.
School buses had already started getting kids loaded up on the bus when this happened. And once that happened, some of the kids were trying to get off the bus because their siblings are in that school. So they're trying to run towards it. So the bus drivers were trying to keep them safe on the bus. And I seen where they eventually just like put them all on the bus and decided to take them home. So at least their families would know where those kids are, that they're safe. And if they had any other kids, they knew, you know, they would have to go find them, basically.
I can't imagine getting that phone call.
Yeah. And a lot of the bus drivers, they had their own kids in there.
Mm-hmm.
Screams of terror and pain began filling the air. Lockers were found half a block away from the explosion, buried in the earth. Ardith Davidson, her teacher, and all but two students would pass away in her class, in the science room class explosion. Dorothy would be pinned under a filing cabinet in debris, unable to free herself, and she could not see or hear her friend Pearl. The explosion had thrown Pearl out of the library, and she was unable to call for help because of the debris and dust that was in her mouth. Eventually, she would hear Dorothy calling for her, and Pearl started making her way towards her screaming friend. She was able to find her, and Pearl began digging through the debris, trying to free her. They took in their surroundings and realized the only way out was up. So they began crawling to the top of the debris, with everything still falling and shifting as all of it was starting to settle. Once they made it to the top of the second story, they began calling for help. There were men by that time already on the scene trying to help rescue any survivors. They ended up tying their coats together, making a net so the girls could jump from the second story building into this makeshift net.
Wow.
Both Dorothy and Pearl would survive. They ended up jumping.
These are definitely some 1930s to 1940s names.
Yeah. And that, again, they could be fake names because they were changed, and you'd get one here and one there. And then so I was just like, okay, whatever. Like, I seen one, her name was Billy Sue or something like that.
Pretty damn authentic.
Yeah. William Gregg, the boy that had just stepped out to clean the erasers right before the school exploded, he was walking out the door to clean these erasers as when the school exploded and it, like, threw him. And he said that he just stood up and took off running. Like, he didn't know what was happening or what he was running from. It was just, I guess, that flight or fight kicked in, mm-hmm. And his was flight. Gotta go.
Something jumped up and bit me.
So that once he finally realized what was going on, he soon realized his brother, I think he had multiple brothers, were in that school. So he turned around and went back to the school. He began digging through, and he said he would find body after body of his deceased peers, some of the bodies in pieces, to the point where he just couldn't take it anymore. After digging for hours, he finally went home. One of his brothers made it out alive. The other one did not.
I couldn't imagine having to dig through that rubble and just pull.
Which I thought I put it in here. Oh, I think I'm getting to it, so I'll wait. W.G. Watson, the one who was waiting to use that power tool when everything exploded around him, basically, said that he woke up outside of the school and he had no memory of what happened or where he was at, why he was even outside. Like, he had no memory of it whatsoever. He was only one of two people in the shop class that would survive the explosion.
Damn.
The student that was in the car outside while he was waiting for his mom to finish up. Well, thank God he was misbehaving because, of course, his mom sent him to the car and he ended up not going to the car. He found some buddies to go play with because once the mom went outside to go find him, because, like I said, I think I'm fixing to talk about it. She went outside and seen her car was crushed under a 2-ton-pound concrete slab that went through her car where her little boy was supposed to be.
Son of a bitch. That's just a pile of twisted metal now.
Yeah. And he was supposed to be in that car.
Wow. That would be freaking the hell out.
Yes. I could not imagine. Which we're fixing to talk about everybody helping. I mean, they just started showing up. As soon as they found out, which I'm fixing to go into detail about it. Like, just hundreds and hundreds of people just started going and just digging through the debris with their hands. Trying to find anybody that they could. Walls were collapsing and falling. And some of them that actually survived the initial explosion were being crushed to death by the falling walls.
Oh, I imagine. And the more everything shifts, the more weight just kind of bears down on anything that it could be sitting on top of.
Yeah.
So there's probably, I said, this is going to be morbid as hell, but there's probably somebody there that's slowly getting crushed to death.
Yeah. Yep.
And that would just be a horrible way to go.
Absolutely awful. One girl had been thrown into the air and was tangled in the power lines. Another boy was found in a tree. Bill, the boy that switched seats with Ethel, would survive. But the little girl that he switched seats with did not. And he said this haunted him for years, and he blamed himself for her death. And years later, he would actually connect with her family and, like, confessed his guilt about it, saying he felt so bad. And they were like, it's not your fault. Like, there's nothing you could have done. Yeah, you switched her seats, but that was normal. Like, there's nothing you could have done.
Yeah. Yeah, but what is it called?
Survivor's guilt.
Yeah. And that happens a lot.
And I don't know if it was the time period with World War, I think, II,
yeah,
and all of this. I'll talk about it a little bit. But what's crazy is which I can imagine. I can imagine why they did this. The parents swept under the rug is not the right word. They basically wanted to act like it did not happen. They would not speak about any children that were that passed. They would not speak about the incident. Like, they just would not speak about it. So, the members of the PTA meeting came rushing out of the gym after all the windows exploded. So that gym was detached from the regular school. And from the explosion of the school, it blew out all the windows in the gym. And they're just sitting in there like, what the hell was that? So all these moms come running out to see what happened. And they're horrified because, of course, their children are in that school. Some collapsed in grief while others snapped into action and began digging through the debris looking for their children. So oil field workers heard the explosion, and they actually thought it was a boiler that went off. And that was pretty common back then for that to happen. And once they realized it was the school, they shut down all of the oil wells and all like went running to help go through the debris trying to find survivors. They started pulling mothers back and saying, you know, let us do this, you know, trying to help with it. I could not imagine as a mother having to dig through debris to look for your children.
No, me either. That would be terrible. I mean, just getting that call alone is heart-wrenching.
Could not imagine. Parents and volunteers from all over town were making their way to the scene to start digging. Screams could be heard as parents were digging through the rubble and by hand and finding casualty after casualty after casualty. They soon realized they would need something more to make their way through the debris, and the oil field workers decided to bring in heavy equipment to help. It also started getting dark, so they started bringing the floodlights from the oil wells to help for like a light source for them.
We call them frack lights now.
Frack lights?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
I don't know why. Well, I guess because they're usually used on fracking locations, but...
Fracking?
Yep.
No fracking way.
Fracking for real, bro.
As the sun began to set, it began to rain. So they worked through the night, the cold, wet rain, trying to bring everyone home that they could. As they were pulling bodies, they began lining them up to try and identify them. Due to the severe injuries, there were limbs being found, bodies without heads, injuries that made identifying them nearly impossible. Some only identified by the clothing they wore. Ardith Davidson would be found and identified only by a brooch and her softball uniform that she was wearing that day for team pictures. One child could only be identified by a pocket knife that he was known to carry. They were quickly running out of room due to the number of bodies, and temporary morgues were set up all over the surrounding areas, meaning some parents would have to drive all over, making stop after stop, just trying to see if their child was at the morgue.
Man.
I can't mentally go there because I would probably start crying.
That's just awful.
So the local Tyler Hospital, Trinity Mother Frances, actually hadn't even opened its doors yet. It was scheduled to open the following day, but because of this tragedy, they already had the doctors and the equipment and everything. They ended up opening a day early to help assist with all the injuries.
And see, that was something that I didn't know.
Yeah, it's crazy. Even with the sheer number of casualties, there only seems to be one misidentification, basically. A girl was buried and had not been completely identified yet. Many believe she was a girl named Wanda, but her father was adamant it was not her. There was another girl named Dale May that had not been found yet either. They were similar in size, and so they ended up exhuming the body and checking for a scar under her toe from an accident when Dale May was younger. When they looked, they realized that her toes were painted, and it was the same color that Wanda had painted her toes just a few nights before the explosion. So they ended up being able to identify her later. By Friday, they completed the search, but here's the next issue. With all of those bodies, they were running out of coffins because it's not like they had a huge supply of child-sized coffins just on standby. So a bunch of people just started volunteering and started making coffins and headstones for the families. Some of them would accept them as a donation, but a lot of them were too proud and they would not accept them as a donation. The death toll was estimated to be about 294. Because this was an oil town, it was very common for families just to pick up and leave suddenly and head back home. It is believed that some of these families picked up and moved back and did not report their children being dead. And so it is believed that the number is actually much higher than 297.
I wonder how many kids total were in the school. You said over 1,000.
I think 1,000. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep. And luckily, there was already, I say luckily, there's no luckily about this. It's awful. But because of that academic thing going on in Henderson, a lot of them were already there competing.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I couldn't imagine how many more there would have been. There were rumors circulating that it was actually an intentional explosion by dynamite. There was a small amount of dynamite that was being stored at the school that was used when I think they were building the football field. However, the explosion of the school was not consistent with a dynamite explosion. It would have left a large crater, and with the it basically kind of imploded on itself and shot up and then came down rather than going out, if I understand it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
It was later determined that there was, in fact, a gas leak under the school, undetected, because at the time there were no additives to the gas to alert of the gas leak. In the days leading to the explosion, students were complaining of their eyes burning, headaches, nausea, and they actually, I guess, kind of were checking, and they were just like, open the doors, you know, we're not sure what it is. I seen one source say they actually sent a janitor down and in the basement, and he was checking things, but he didn't have a light source, so he struck a match. But nothing happened. I guess it just wasn't that bad yet down there. I don't know, but he struck a match and didn't.
I have actually seen people check for gas leaks with lighters.
I just cannot. I'm just like, what?
Oh, it's wild.
What? So when the power tool was plugged in, it sparked and then ignited this huge gas leak because of that storage building that they were right next to was connected to the basement. It was all just building in that and then funneling through that.
Mm-hmm.
Causing the devastating explosion. Many investigations occurred, but they all resulted in basically saying no one person was to blame. They couldn't blame it on one person. Many parents wanted to point the finger at Mr. Shaw, since he was actually the one that ended up pushing for the gas heat through the school and then doing the bleed off line. But he argued it was a group decision by the school board. It wasn't just his decision. And I couldn't imagine just blaming one person. I don't think he did it purposely. I think he was just trying to save the school money, and just they didn't know any better. They just didn't know any better.
Yeah, and I don't know how you can blame any one person for that whenever it's like basically a mechanical failure.
Yeah. Yep. Well, in the aftermath, Texas made it a requirement that all natural gas must contain an additive to alert people of a leak. They also made it a requirement that the gas installations must be completed by a certified professional. The New London school tragedy quickly faded from public knowledge. A lot of parents and students said it was just too painful to talk about, and they basically wanted it to be forgotten. Many of the parents would even refuse to speak of the children who died that day. Many of the survivors suffered from survivor's guilt, and New London would finish the school year just 11 days later.
Wow. That's kind of cool. I wonder how they add the name, because they etch those in, don't they?
I guess. I don't know. Which I didn't put it in the story, and I should have. One kind of weird tidbit was Hitler sent out like an apology, I'm thinking of you guys, to the town because of it.
That's crazy. You mentioned that last night, and it blew everybody's mind.
Yeah.
Like, that's nuts. But, I mean, that was around that time.
And I seen where they had to send some kids as far as, like, Louisiana to get help, like, because the hospitals were just overran, and so that some of them had to go as far as Louisiana to be treated, or even some of the morgue, like temporary morgues, which were not that far from Louisiana. Like, we're deep East Texas.
Yeah. What are we, like, an hour and 20 minutes from Shreveport? Yeah. Something like that?
Something like that. So, that is the new, that, and I didn't mention it. So that was your suggestion. You found it. Of course, the anniversary just happened last month, and you sent it to me and said, hey, I want to know more about this.
So mm-hmm.
We did it.
We did.
Look at her sleeping.
Everybody kept their eyes open for the most part.
We're going to zoom in on her right there.
She's snoring over here.
We should put the microphone right by her.
Probably, you're probably going to be able to hear her in the background, I would imagine.
If you hear snoring during this podcast, it's because Tori went to sleep after about 2.5 seconds.
She made it about 10 minutes.
Maybe. I don't even think so. All right, guys. Well, we've got a busy day. Tomorrow's Easter. Our middle is getting baptized. The Easter Bunny still has to come. All that fun stuff.
Yep.
So enjoy your Easter. I hope you enjoyed your Easter holiday, because this will be coming out after Easter. Next week, we will be covering probably, it's one of two stories. So we actually have something coming up with some friends where we're going to go do the Tyler Speakeasy. It's like a serial killer thing. And they like tell the story and you get a cocktail for each story. And there's four of them that they're doing. And we haven't done like a super famous, infamous serial killer yet. So I read off the list to Josh on the ones they're covering at the Speakeasy. So next week, we'll be doing our first huge serial killer.
Yep. Get ready for a big one.
We just have to decide which one we're doing.
Might be another two-parter, I would imagine.
Possibly.
Because this is going to have a lot of information.
That's why I'm thinking about doing the first one we talked about, because there's not as much. I think I can do that in one. Even though the second option has some very recent update.
Yeah.
So.
And I kind of feel like we should put the fire to that one.
Do that one.
Because there's so much relevancy to it right now.
Yeah.
I feel like it might get more traffic.
Probably. And that one blows my mind.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do that one if I have enough time. So, get ready for next week. It's going to be true crime. No matter what story it is, they're both wild.
Yeah, they are.
So get ready. Tune in next week. Where the guilty confess.
And the ghostly never rest.
Bye, guys.
See y'all later.
I forgot it for a minute.
Yeah, you did.